This is the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news. To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the road.
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
Joining me on the podcast, full house here at Yahoo, Brian Scalabrine, Michael Lee, Sham Sharania, joining me here in studio. Fellas, what's happening?
So how exactly does this work?
Do you want to get paid extra again? Like last time you were on.
You said the next time I go on the podcast, you're going to give me one of those sponsors.
I did.
And I said, I don't want the MeUndies sponsor.
No, because we talked about that. We said Woj reading that has totally screwed with our minds.
But I'll take, like, I can't get a Blue Apron or something like that?
I think I have a mattress company that's sponsoring.
I need a new mattress.
Now. All right.
I mean, you guys should, we should all.
Do you have one of those Dion Waiters mattresses, like the 10-foot
mattresses? Nah, come on, man. I'm a normal guy.
I don't know. All right, fellas, thanks for joining me here, though. Couple of days now, less than 2 days before the trade deadline, and a few of the bigger stories out there. And Shams, I want to start with you on Cleveland. Everybody wants to know. It just seems like an incredibly toxic environment right now. They're having bad team meetings. Isaiah Thomas is running his mouth about everything. They're giving up points in unbelievable bunches. What's going on in that Cleveland front office right now?
I think it's more so what's going on with the team. I think they're going through a lot of dysfunction, and a lot of that starts with they don't have the talent right now to really compete. And I think they're realizing that as the year's going on. They don't have the young guns that you need on the wing, in the front court, to really compete at a high level. A lot of the time, the last week, 2 weeks, it's been LeBron and then everyone else. Isaiah Thomas had a really hot start when he came back from his hip injury in early January. And he's completely, fallen off. And That was a little bit to be expected, I think, because he went through a grueling 7.5-month rehab. But, they needed him to come back and be IT, and he has not been IT. And that's throwing the chemistry off. They have a lot of guys on the bench that can't play. So I think, they're going through a lot of chemistry issues, but also talent issues.
Yeah, we know that, but what are they going to do? What are they going to do? Are they going to make a move? That's what we want to know. We know that they're messed up. Everyone knows they're messed up. Like, my son's 4. He knows they're messed up. But what are they going to do? You know what they're going to do.
They're being active. Listen, they're being active. They've had issues finding out which direction they're going to go in over the last 48 hours or so. They've had serious questions within the front office.
It's another non-answer.
But they are going to be aggressive. They are looking at guys like Derek Favors and before he got traded, Lou Williams. And DeAndre Jordan is their number one target. If they can somehow convince the Clippers to take on one of their bad contracts, whether it's J.R. Smith or Tristan Thompson, and give their own first, I mean, they would jump at that. They would love to complete a deal like that, but those scenarios just aren't in play right now.
Let me ask you one other thing here, because you reported that LeBron will not waive his no-trade clause. How would you characterize the relationship between LeBron and that team right now?
I think it's challenged because he looks around and, I mean, anyone of his stature. I mean, it's kind of like when Kobe was with the Lakers. You look around, when they were going through those trying times, he's looking at the locker room. Man, I don't have the guns. I don't have the assets that we can actually go and compete. I think that's the way he's looked at it from an outsider's point of view. But what he's been steadfast in is, I'm not letting go of my no-trade clause. I don't care if the owner, I don't care if the GM, I don't care if the coach, anyone in the organization wants me to let it go. I'm staying here. I'm here for the long haul. And he said it last night right after the story ran. Like, I'm staying here. I don't care about any external pressures. I'm finishing this year out as a Cavalier. I'm not going to have anyone try to force my hand. And even though the last few days teams have been privately looking into the situation, and there were several teams that were chomping at the bit if there was a potential of him declining his option, and people around him made it clear, listen, we're not letting go of the option no matter what is emanating out of parts of Cleveland.
He wants the Brooklyn pick to be in play. Do you think the Brooklyn pick is in play coming into the deadline?
I have not gotten that sense from talking to multiple teams that the Cavaliers have been engaged with. I've gotten the sense that it's completely off the table. That can change. I mean, they have a lot of pressure going into tomorrow. That can very well change, but people around the situation just don't see that pick being part of any shift or any deal.
All right, Scout. looking at the drama that's gone on in Cleveland over the last, you know, few months, really, when people on the outside look at these team meetings that are blowing up and looking at, you know, players kind of finger pointing at each other, they look at it and say, well, that seems like a pretty big deal. Is everything that's gone on in Cleveland a big deal? Is it a bigger deal, I guess, than the things they've dealt with over the last couple of years?
So I would say yes, it's probably a big deal. They obviously don't look like a good team right now. They still have LeBron. LeBron is not engaged in playing right as you watch him, but he does have the ability to flip the switch. They were awful in March and April of last year. He flipped the switch, and I don't think he's going to run through the Eastern Conference like they did last year, but I could totally see them getting a favorable first-round matchup and then playing basically four games in the span of 2 weeks and getting all rested and rejuvenated, and next thing you know, these guys are back on track. Now, you know, maybe they're in a grueling first-round matchup. I just don't think it's as clear-cut as, like, this team is messed up and they're not going to be good. I don't know if they're – I can't – it's hard for me to imagine that in the playoffs, but I got to see it before I go down that road.
But, Scal, they are getting hammered on these nationally televised games by bad teams, too. Like, maybe not – the Orlando game recently – I mean, every time they play Orlando, they're getting blitzed for like a $1.15, $1.20 every single night. I mean, I'm a believer that there's a switch that you can flip that makes you play harder, that makes you inherently better. When I talk to coaches about the Cavs, it's they're not playing hard in transition defense. No. They're basically giving up on pick and rolls. I understand that you can play harder and games are stretched out, spaced out a little bit more in the postseason, that you get better, but I don't see it getting so much better that it closes the gap that they've created there. I mean, they've created such a gap between themselves and top-tier teams that I don't see how they close it.
I mean, to me, it's like this, Chris. If we go out there and play hoops right now and I'm coasting through three quarters and you have 25 points on me and all of a sudden then I want to flip the switch and turn and try to stop you, it's hard.
Yes, but I'm terrible and you're really good.
But what if I got like right into your airspace right from the beginning like it was the playoffs and I like didn't let you breathe and next thing you know you're like, man, I can't believe. Like when you see players that play against LeBron, I'm not going to say there's fear because I don't want NBA players to be all, you know, get all upset that I think there's fear in their eyes, but there's fear in the eyes of NBA players when LeBron's coming down in transition. They bounce off him. He powers through him. Then they walk to the free throw line, and there's like this amazement, like a disbelief. I can't believe what I just felt. I tried to tackle him, and he threw me to the ground. And that's where the psychological advantage kicks in. Maybe he's not capable of taking his game to a new level. I do know this. If he plays hard, the rest of his team plays hard. If he coasts, the rest of his team coast, and he's been coasting all year long.
I think the problem is I don't think he realized how much the Warriors would mess up his entire world. I mean, and then when you add KD to completely mess it up. Like, when he went to Cleveland, he had visions of being there for his entire career, rest of his career, I believe. I think he went there intent on building another super team, winning championships, restoring glory to Cleveland that had never been there before. The Warriors completely flipped the script. They messed it all up. They came out of nowhere. No one saw the Warriors coming. And then when Kevin Durant went there, that meant that his quest of trying to get championships, trying to match Michael, whatever it was that he's after, that's over.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that in his mind, he's looking around trying to figure out, what can I do? Because he's chasing Michael's ghost. He wants to go down as the GOAT. And he knows that the argument always going to come down to how many championships do you have? And so when he looks at this team right now, and he sees a team that has no chance to win a championship. He sees the Warriors only getting better. KD's getting better. KD's been coming after him for a long time, and he's known it for a long time. From the time they met in the finals with Oklahoma City and Miami, he knows that KD's going to be the guy. He joined the team that just blew up his entire plans, and now he's stuck. You got to look at Cleveland. Right now, he's becomes a free agent this year. Where does he go? What options does he have other than staying in Cleveland right now? He can't go to the Lakers. They've already said they're not going to trace LeBron. And LeBron's not going to the Lakers because he's not going to win there. Where does he go?
Philly.
Does he go to Houston?
Philly.
Does he go to Philly? But are those teams really going to put him closer to beating Golden State? Because it's not just about being a playoff team or being a contender. It's about winning a championship. And to win a championship, he has to beat the Warriors. He has to beat KD. He has to beat the team that has taken him out two of the last three times he's gone to the finals. and probably would have beaten him 3 years in a row if not for a suspension and not for Steph Curry coming from a knee injury. So the Warriors have really blown up his spot in a way that I don't think anybody could imagine.
Well, the one reason I think that Philly is a realistic possibility is that because you add LeBron to that mix, and I think right away next season they're an Eastern Conference contender. And as LeBron starts to age a little bit, he doesn't have to be the great LeBron James on that team, because you're probably going to have the great Joel Embiid. You may have the great Markelle Fultz. Who knows what happens with him?
No, we know.
Maybe not the great.
Get rid of the yips.
But no, you've got Ben Simmons, who is a superstar in the making, and you all of a sudden you become a destination place for those free agents that might be looking to chase a ring. So I can see, you know, LeBron maybe playing the long game with the 76ers. Look, he's not going to retire anytime soon. And if he wants to maybe outlast Golden State, I mean, that Sixers team, you know, assuming they pay the money to keep that group together, they have the ability to, you know, wait for Golden State to age a little bit and be the team that succeeds them later on.
He goes there, they're better than Boston?
Depending on what Boston does, yeah. I mean, yeah, they're probably better than Boston with LeBron.
LeBron is about winning, then he would, if he really is, like, let's say Golden State is like crushing him right now, and he's about winning, then you got to have conversations with San Antonio. You got to have conversations like, go team up with Kawhi Leonard and see if you can beat him. Conversations with Milwaukee. Go see if you can go there and beat, you know, like, add it. Go to Philly, or even another one, which we just saw him last night, Toronto. Go to Toronto then, if that's what you're about. I mean, there are some teams that you can go to that are really good. Go to Washington. I mean, there are some good teams out there that you can make the difference, but is he about winning?
But who, and how do you define winning? Like, he wants...
Winning championships.
No. I'm saying, does it mean he has to sacrifice being a max player? Does he take
leave $25 million on the table to go to Washington?
Kevin Durant did it.
Kevin Durant didn't leave that much money.
He left $10 million.
Kevin Durant left $10 million on the table this year to sign Iguodala and Livingston.
Yes, he did.
So if it's about winning, I mean, Kevin Durant's going to get paid. And LeBron's older, so I understand that. But listen, at the end of the day, this is his mess. I thought it was great. He thought that he was going to go there, and I got to beat the San Antonio Spurs. That's what he thought when he went there. Yeah. He just came off the finals. The Spurs beat them. Remember that year, Kevin Love had like a 46-20 against the Spurs, and I think they ended up beating him. So he said, Kevin Love is the guy I need. He's the guy that can beat the Spurs, but... The Warrior thing did mess him up. Kevin Durant did mess him up. But I don't know if it's, at this point, about that. I think it's about getting through this season and trying to see if he can make anything of what they have left. I don't think he's tapped out on this season.
And I think for him, he's in a tough spot, too, because, you know, Cleveland screwed up royally last summer. When you look at what happened with, David Griffin not bringing him back, but then deciding to trade Kyrie Irving. But when they decided to trade Kyrie Irving, that meant they were going all in on LeBron, at least probably to him. Because you give up your future, you're saying these 4 years of LeBron are the most important 4 years in this franchise's history. We have to commit ourselves to making sure we maximize all that LeBron brings us. So in his mind, that Brooklyn pick means nothing. That Brooklyn pick means we use this pick to get another player to make my last season here worthwhile. And if it's even goes even greater, I'm signing, I'm staying, and I have a chance to win more championships here. So when he looks at that Brooklyn pick and their refusal to give it up, he's looking at them saying, what are we doing here? You gave up Kyrie Irving. You gave up an explosive, you know, dynamic player who's already proven I can win a championship with him. You gave him up. You brought back these other pieces. You told me that this is what's going to win with. I'm going to win with this. And then you decide, we got these guys, but we're not going to go all the way in. If you're not going to go all the way in, you don't trade Kyrie. So
Kyrie didn't want to be there.
No, I know that.
He didn't want to go through this dog and pony show, the LeBron James, everywhere he goes,
he's
all the drama.
Still on the contract.
Kyrie's like, you know what? I don't want to go through what the Cavs are going through.
I understand
right now.
That, yeah.
Like, who wants to? Like, Kevin Love would say the exact same thing, but he just doesn't. But he didn't want to. I mean, who wants to play on this team now? Okay, J.R. Smith, I won a championship. I'm going to take you as a starting lineup because I'm signing peanut butter or jelly or whoever he is, right? Like Tristan Thompson, like that was his boy. Does any of these guys want to play with LeBron anymore? LeBron went from the greatest teammate ever. Everybody in Miami, oh, I love LeBron. To what? Like none of these guys want to play with him anymore.
Yeah, and I think one thing you got to look at too is that last year in Miami when they lost to the Spurs and they got basically five games swept almost. You got to look at that. That his free agency had to be even greater distraction than we were ever let on. You know, you got to give the Heat credit, that Heat culture. They kept any possible problems under wraps because just of Pat Riley and everything else. And now everything's just being exposed. But I wonder what kind of problems were in place in Miami that last year, because it's tough if you're trying to commit to winning and you don't know if your guy's going to be there long term. And I think for these guys, they've saw what happened. They've seen LeBron move on. And I think it's tough to commit.
Michael, some of the stuff I'm reading, I don't know, man. If you're a writer and you're getting all this information from LeBron and you put this stuff out there, like LeBron wasn't consulted about the guy. Like, are you like just is your relationship with LeBron? And I'm not saying you. I'm saying you as a writer. You're representing writers. Is your relationship with LeBron that much that you would think that the public is stupid? Like, that LeBron was just hanging out on a yacht, and next thing you know, Kyrie got traded? Like, you didn't know, but you knew you wanted to trade him for Paul George, but you weren't consulted with this one? Like, it insults the intelligence of people who follow basketball. And you got to deal with that, too. Like, would you write an article like that because LeBron told you to do that? So that's why I look at Kyrie and say, when I came to New York and watched the Cavs play the Knicks, and I was in town to cover the C's for Brooklyn, right? I'm at this game. And every one of the Cavs beat writers, they came up to me and told me how bad of a person Kyrie is. And so I go, that's interesting. He's been real cool to me. I know he's like weird with the flat earth thing and everything like that, but like you went out of your way to tell me that. What is this? Like is this like an executive order? Whatever LeBron says, you have to follow suit? It's embarrassing for some of these guys to write these articles. Just say what it is. No one comes out. When Dwayne Wade goes there, it's all about how great it is for LeBron and his boy to drink wine after training camp. But no one talks about cutting Richard Jefferson or J.R. Smith getting taken out of the starting lineup. It's like a facade.
Yeah, well, I mean, in fairness to the guys that cover the team, I don't know what their relationship was like with Kyrie. I mean, I know that there were incidents where he was difficult for them to deal with. I know they bumped heads with him on numerous occasions. Who knows? Maybe it was because he was frustrated that LeBron got all the attention. But I know that they talk to both sides. They get perspective from everywhere, and then they get to determine their own truth. And I think that's sort of what's happening. But I don't want to say that they're just taking whatever LeBron gives them. I think they take the next step and try to really flesh out, you know, the whole story. That's just in defense of the guys that cover the team, because I know that they're not just LeBron's mouthpiece in a lot of ways.
All right, before we move on from Cleveland, one of the wild cards, if they don't make a big deal, look, I'm of the opinion that they probably can make either a George Hill deal or a comparable type of deal that brings in a backcourt guy. I was reporting early in the week that the Cavs were trying to make Sacramento swallow the shitburger that is the, you know, J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert contracts, the podcast, Mike. You can say a few things here.
Oh, whoa. HBO.
They were trying to swallow that. Sacramento's not going to do that, but I think Sacramento's motivated to deal George Hill to Cleveland. But the wild card, if they only make a nominal change, scales Isaiah Thomas. And where Isaiah is now, how much better do you think he's going to get in March, in April? What kind of player, what kind of asset is he going to be to the Cavaliers when it comes playoff time?
I have no idea. This is like this.
But you've been a believer for a while that he was going to.
Yeah,
to
but
turn
I like assume. So it's the NBA is a fine line between being good to great, great to all-star, Hall of Famer. It's all these like small little like jumps, right? And I don't know if he can't create separation the way he did in Boston, then it's going to be tough for him to be the type of player he wants to be. Now, is that there's two avenues? Is it LeBron? Is it the culture there? Was it just Brad Stevens, like as you know, the stuff, the position that he put him in? Or is it just like Isaiah lacks a little bit of explosiveness because of the hip injury? Like when I watch, he's not the same player. I don't know why he's not the same player. There, I know it could be A, B, or C. I'm just not sure which one it is. But I will say this. If it's culture, you can change that. If it's hip, you and let's say this is it for the hip, this is what we're seeing, And that's not going to change.
Yeah, I think that's a big question mark for them. And look, defensively, he's just getting attacked every single time down. I mean, teams are telling me, like, we target him. Like, that's – and I don't know if it probably was the same in Boston. They maybe just did a better job of hiding him in certain situations. But, you know, he's dying on pick and rolls. He's – you know, it doesn't seem like he's giving maximum effort on that end of the floor every time down. Maybe it is the hip. Maybe it's his wind. But he just doesn't seem like he can defend anywhere near an average level.
I just see a guy who was already a poor defender who now has no lateral movement. And that's just a bad combination. You know, he's already little. Teams are going to attack him as it is. He just can't bring it. I wonder if he should even be playing. You know, I think if he had probably had another year on his deal, I doubt if he's even on the floor right now. I think he's rehabbing. He probably even has surgery in the offseason because he knows that he can miss it. But the fact that he's in the last year of his deal, he had put so much in the Celtics, I think in his mind he was going to be there. And to get traded, that just messed him up. And then he had to come out and play. And he's had to play now because when you make Brinkstrup statements, you got to hope that that happens for you. And that's not happening for him. And I think it's sort of like he's doubling down on it by playing now because he has no choice. But I think if he had another year on his deal, he had some security, he wouldn't even be out there. And that's sort of the messed up thing. And I think his teammates even recognize it. And the other thing, too, I think that he's confronting is that in Boston, he was the guy. He was the guy that everybody looked to. He was the guy that everybody trusted to get things done. And when he got traded there, he sort of had to keep that mentality that I am the guy. But guys in Cleveland are like, hold up, man. LeBron's the guy. Kevin Love's the second guy. Dwayne Wade's got rings, so he's another guy. You ain't the guy. And you can't come in and start, you know, popping off about guys not playing D, the guys not giving effort, when you have no equity with the program. If you haven't invested in enough to say anything, you need to just kind of stay in the background and just say, hey, guys, I don't know enough to really comment, so I'm going to let these other guys, I'm going to defer to these other guys. I think they would have respected it a lot more if he didn't come in acting like he was already a part of the show.
You guys, people, we had a team meetings, right? And obviously, as a media guy, I'm like crazy opinionated. Even stuff I don't care about, I act like I care, right? But we have the team meetings, right? And it goes around the room. And it is like nine people say, like, what are you? You shouldn't even be talking. It comes to me, and every time, the same words, I ain't got nothing to say. I mean, I don't understand. I've been a part of all these team meetings, locker room only. Like no one, once in a while, you'll get something productive. But once in a while, it's like a Hail Mary, right? But every time it came to me, like, Rondo called me out one time, and he was like, come on, Scal, I know you got something to say. I go, nope, I ain't got nothing to say. Keep it moving, man.
Sometimes just you got to know your place. You know your place.
But you got to remember, Isaiah was top five in MVP voting last year.
Yeah.
He was the guy. He was the leader of the locker room. He would call guys out. And in Boston, I don't know if they all liked it. You know, like this is a different generation now. These new players don't want to be called out. They just want to go out there and play and everything is fine.
Yep.
But it's not. So when Isaiah calls guys out, they're going to look at him like, who the hell are you? That's just how it is.
Yeah, if it went down like he's calling out Kevin Love in there in the team meeting and you know, questioning whether he's sick, I'm sure guys are looking at him like, what in the world? Yeah. Like, are you serious? Like, this is our second best player?
All right, let me move on to Boston. This is where I should note for podcast listeners that we've lost Shams. He has disappeared into the world of cell phones, and he's not able to contribute.
All he does is check Twitter.
Yes. No, like, he's working.
What do you mean he's working?
He's working.
How is text messaging people working?
Well, you text messaging agents, executives. That's what I mean. That's what I've done
that's work?
Twice in the last half an hour. Yeah, so
what do you do? Hey, how's it going? Anything going
check
on?
Check in. You check in. Yeah, check something in. Like that. Gotcha. Along those lines.
What you hearing?
Along those lines.
All right. I'm so glad I'm not in that.
But we can open up the discussion on Boston too, because you know both of us are around that team a lot. The Celtics, they made one of their big moves already. They got Greg Monroe, and he hasn't played yet for the team. But I look at that as being a pretty significant upgrade. Somebody that can be an extra big body out there, maybe anchor a second unit offensively. We can debate how significant a player he is for them, but it's a good move for the Celtics to get a Greg Monroe for nothing. Now the question becomes, what do they do with some of their assets? Do they make a deal to go and get a player giving up a significant asset? We know that they've been dangling Marcus Smart in trade talks. Marcus is entering, or is in the last year of his contract. He's looking for more money. this offseason. Celtics have had Terry Rozier emerge as a player. You know, we know they have had their eye on Tyreke Evans. Do you think the Celtics give up something to get maybe someone that could be a rental like Evans for the rest of the season?
So give up a first-round pick. When you say something, you don't mean a second, right?
No, I mean, I think seconds they give up. I think you know, seconds they
I just want to make sure that we're being clear. So do I think they give up a first-round pick to get somebody like a Tyreke Evans?
Yeah.
So I don't know how, like, informative it, your listeners are. But
very informative. Very
informative. So if Tyreke Evans had bird rights, I think they might think about it. But I don't think they will for a three-month rental. First of all, Tyreke Evans is making $3 million. Like, he's better than that. So no matter what, you got to go into your cap to pay him. They don't have the space to keep him. So I don't see him getting rid of what I consider, and I hope like the union doesn't get mad at me for calling him cheap labor, but in reality of the NBA, this is what this is, right? I don't think they give up cheap labor for a guy for 3 months. I don't think they make that move. If they give up Marcus Smart, I could see him trying to reload. Remember, Marcus Smart's a lottery pick. I could see him trying to get a first-round pick, and the only reason why they would be doing that is to prolong the idea of cheap labor once again. You're going to do that. You want to have guys at lineup. Now, also with that cheap labor, those could turn into a blockbuster. And really, at the end of the day, there's only one blockbuster that they would be targeting, which would be Anthony Davis. So, Tyreke for 3 months, or the difference between getting Anthony Davis down the road or not, I think they're going to continue to play the long game.
You know who would give up a first-round pick, Mike? Bobby Marks. Bobby Marks would give up
the
first round.
What is your deal with that?
Sorry, I had to sneak that in there just in case Bobby's listening and I could get one more Nets pick dig.
Yeah, that's what, so I know it wasn't, and to be, and just to be clear, it wasn't Bobby that made the decision.
No, it was not Bobby.
Okay.
It's fun to, it's fun. I'm actually, and I've told Bobby this, I'm rooting for that Nets pick to make its way to the West Coast so Bobby could help teams across the country. It could be like he could just be the gift that keeps on giving.
But that Nets trade destroyed every general manager's rebuild for the next 50 years.
Yes.
How are the Celtics able to take this and turn it into that? If you start looking at that Brooklyn trade, it doesn't stop there. It continues. They got a trade exception that they moved for Tyler Zeller. And in that Tyler Zeller absorption, they got Cleveland's first because they had to make room for LeBron. That first turned into Isaiah, which later on turned into Kyrie. That Brooklyn, it never stops giving. It continues to give over and over and over again. But teams are trying to rebuild on the fly without having that.
Yeah.
Of course, don't get me wrong, they had to make the right picks and get the right free agents and all that stuff. But of course, their rebuild took a historic 3 years from the bottom to the top. Yeah. They had those Brooklyn picks and everything that came from that.
If I'm looking at my phone, I'm a GM, and Danny Ainge on the other line, I'm not answering.
How bad was that Philly trade?
About to get swindled.
If Philly, right now, if Philly had Simmons, Tatum, and Embiid, LeBron would not be thinking about going there?
Oh, he'd be there.
I mean, just think about it. If they had – think about that size.
Yeah.
Simmons at the one.
Tatum would be great playing alongside Simmons, too. Just the scorer alongside the playmaker, he'd be great.
How bad – and not only that, and they gave up the pick? And they gave up the pick?
Yeah. I never understood the fit with Fultz in the first place. I mean, just because he needs the ball in his hands. I know he's trying to play off the ball, but – that's a tough adjustment when you've gone from being the guy who controls it and then you got another guy who says, I control it. And that's a tough position. I don't even know if he comes back how they're going to work it out.
That caused him to get the yips.
Yeah.
He's thinking about playing off the ball and it messed his jumper up.
Yeah.
The guy shot 40% in college. That's a whole nother.
But, yeah, that is.
That's but the Celtics, to me, they do nothing unless they're trying to accumulate another first rounder. And that would be because they figure they can't sign Marcus Smart back, or the emergence of Terry Rozier has forced them to say, Terry's not up for another year after that. So you're prolonging the inevitable once again.
All right, before we move on, Scal, I'm going to help you out here with somebody that's going to hook you up, I hope, with a new mattress, our friends over at Mattress Firm. Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except they stretch your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping in America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run. You like that? And you'll have a ball. Like that, too. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise. But know this, they are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed, from adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor. They have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast, see what deals are happening as I read this sentence to you. They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection, 120-night low-price guarantee, so you know you paid the perfect price.
You got to give it back?
You don't have to give it back.
And what do they do with those old-ass mattresses?
I don't know, but that's a good question. I will ask them before I make them give you a mattress.
I don't want the old-ass mattress.
Set that one. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. It is the official mattress someday of Brian Scalabrine.
Man, how come you didn't have a hockey reference in there?
I don't know.
Yeah.
They'll get it next time. All right.
Cover you like a cornerback, not like the Patriots cornerback.
Well, maybe the one that didn't play. Actually, that's the problem.
Good point.
All right, so we talked about two big fish out there in the Eastern Conference, Boston and Cleveland. Give me a team that you think needs to make a deal before the deadline, for whatever reason. Give me a team that you like to make a deal here.
I'm going Oklahoma City. Just because I think that losing Robertson is a huge loss for them, because he...
Avery Bradley would look good in Oklahoma
City. He brought
City.
So much to them defensively. He brought so much to them. He has problems, deficiency with his shot, and that could come back to haunt him in the playoffs. But just the fact that you would have had Russ and Robertson in a playoff series, you could throw him. Houston, you got two guys that could shut it down. Golden State, you got two guys that could really create problems. And I just think that his absence is going to be something they have to compensate for at some point. And I think, you know, Paul and Russ have proven that they can play together. Carmelo's been accommodating and with his role and taking a back seat, even to Steven Adams. I think you can just find the right pieces around that group and go from there. And I think you're right. Avery Bradley will look good in that uniform because of what he can bring defensively and maybe if he can rediscover his shot. But I just think overall, if OKC can find another perimeter defender, a veteran guy who can help them on the defensive end. Because if you're going to try to win in the West, you're going to try to beat Houston, you're going to try to beat Golden State, you got to have wing defenders, and you can't just put it all on Paul George because he's going to have to do some heavy lifting on the offensive end too.
Oklahoma City, from what I'm told, is being very opportunistic. They have done all the research on the Bradleys, the Jonathan Simmons.
Hood,
pretty much every wing player out there, they've done a lot of research on. But they're in a tough spot because they're limited in terms of their assets. They don't have a first-round pick to deal this year. They don't have a lot of guys that are all that appealing outside of their core players. So they're in a tough spot. I think what Oklahoma City is waiting for is to see if one of these teams that is dangling a wing player is going to blink and say, all right, we'll take, you know, just whatever you can give us. We want to move this guy. We want to get something back in return, and we'll take it if you get. If that happens, I think Oklahoma City can steal someone. But if teams are holding firm on a significant asset, I think Oklahoma City is going to get left out in all this.
And I'm with you with the buyout market. I think people are more geared up towards that.
Yeah, that's something we haven't discussed it in the podcast. But the buyout market is widely believed from a lot of GMs out there to potentially be pretty robust because there are teams that are going to try to tank. Look, we've made all these rules, right? Like against tanking. You can't rest guys on certain days. We're changing the lottery system next year. There's no rule of just cutting guys. Like there's no rule on saying like, you know what? Let's use the Knicks for an example. Like Joakim Noah, Courtney Lee. Like these guys might help us win a few games. Now that Porzingis is down, we don't want to win any games. Yeah. So we're just going to let guys go. I think there's could be an influx of talent on the market from these bottom feeding teams that don't want to win, and I know that's in the minds of a lot of executives out there talking trade right now.
Yeah, so then the thing about if you're in the buyout market, Oklahoma City's got to be attractive, right? Because it's like, what, you're going there for a couple months. Yeah. You get a chance to play with Russell Westbrook, see what he's all about. Obviously, Paul George, Carmelo, all those guys. So I can see that being interesting. You know, you always throw Cleveland in there, but I don't know about Cleveland this year. Boston will be an interesting one as well. Maybe you think, well, they need some offense. I can provide that. So just I think the buyout market is going to be probably a funner market. And the simple fact that you don't have to give up anything. You know, Tyree Givens is really good. A first-round pick for Tyreek Evans for 3 months? What if there's like a guy that's just like, for the Boston Celtics, like his marginally better than a guy in the buyout, and that's worth a first-round draft pick for? Yeah. So I can see the buyout market being what we're really talking about. And most of the time, it comes down to recruiting. It's not necessarily, because everyone's probably tapped out or, you know, with their salaries. It's always a bunch of minimum deals. Yeah. But in this situation, except Miami does have their disabled player from Dion Waiters, it's going to come down to trying to sell what you already got going. And I think there's some teams out there that are really looking to make a move. Houston would be another one. A team that can really say, all right, I might want to be on a team and go deep in the playoffs. That might help my value next year in the open market. So trade deadline's nice. Might be a big blockbuster trade, but I don't think like little tiny additions. Buyout market is going to be interesting.
Scal, one of the teams you were talking about earlier in the day in terms of making a deal is Washington. And the Wizards are in a tough spot. There's some rumblings I'm hearing out there that the Wizards, that there might be a Gortat Oubre sort of situation for DeAndre Jordan that could be discussed. I mean, the Clippers, they have long said they don't want to bottom out. Gortat is a talented guy, bit of a pain in the ass at times, but he's
sort of got a little back and forth with John Wall.
Yeah, right, and that may have sort of poisoned the well a little bit more. Oubre's a talented guy, but you got to give something to get something. So I think that's something. But you'd brought up John Wall in some of the videos we're doing here over at Yahoo. What would you do in the situation with the John Wall?
If I could get, like, the thing that really makes sense to me is like Chicago, for instance. If that's a major superstar. Now, I don't know if Washington would. I just think Washington's capped out, and I don't know how good that team is. And I'm all for winning, but to be completely capped out and next thing you know, you're a second-round exit or a first-round exit, I don't think that's a good place to be. If you're capped out and you believe you can win a championship, I'm fine with that. I'm fine going into the tax, whatever you need to do. But like, is it feasible for Washington to look at Chicago and say, we'll take Chris Dunn and your pick this year? Is that feasible? Like, is that a decent trade? Is that a decent haul for a John Wall at $214 million with a bunch of injury history? You said he hasn't been healthy this year. He also wasn't healthy the year before.
Wouldn't that scare you, though?
And he wasn't healthy the year before. He wasn't healthy the year before. So
well, then why would somebody – I mean, look.
No, I don't know. Maybe, Mike, maybe people need that superstar.
You can, Mike, you can weigh in on that because I know you disagree with Scal on that one. Yeah. But if I'm a team looking at John Wall, I look at all the knee injuries. I look at a contract that's eventually going to play him close to $40 million, which gobbles up a huge amount of your cap space. Yeah. I don't know that I'd give up real assets right now for a John Wall.
Yeah, it wouldn't even be anything worth exploring. You mentioned that, you know, that you'd be capped out. That's going to be half the league now. I mean, just the way everyone went crazy 2016.
This summer is going to be a lot of free agents looking around going, where's my
money?
Yeah,
everybody had money to blow and they blew it, you know, with a bunch of guys.
But that's part of the union's fault.
Yeah.
For not curbing if they had done that,
I think we'd be in a much better situation.
It's on them as much as it is, you know, these teams.
I'm with you.
Yeah, because like Myers Leonard got like $40 million and Marcus Smart and other guys looking around going, where's my payday? Yeah.
And I think that, you know, now teams are going to have to pay the price because before, you know, it'd always be like three, maybe four teams that paid the luxury tax. And that's right. Usually the teams that are really chasing a championship. Now you're going to be in a situation where, what, like 14, 15 teams, half the league probably is going to wind up paying the tax. I mean, everybody is spending money. So that's sort of just what the cost of doing business now. And I think if you're the Wizards and, you know, it's a tough spot because, you know, Ted Leonsis has never paid the luxury tax. He's going to pay it this year. And it's a situation that he was willing to do because, again, they made it to Game 7 of the semifinals. He thought that they were going to make that leap. They haven't made that leap. And you're right, John Wall has been hurt. But I just think that they see a lot more value in him. And there's one of the reasons why they gave him that extension is because they've always – like, John is like a different type of player for them in what he's represented for that franchise because the Wizards, this franchise, Bullets, whatever – last 40 years, it has been dreadful, dreadful what that franchise is. Now, and I think this rebuild that they went through just to get to this point, it's bare fruit. You got a five-time All-Star and point guard. You got All-Star and Bradley Beal, a shooting guard. So you've had some benefits to that. And I think that, you know, if you look at it, where they can go – they're still young. And from talking to guys in the organization, they believe in their core. They have a lot of confidence that the young guys that they have are only going to get better. They feel like, you know, Tomas Satoransky, he's getting an opportunity now without John Wall. They feel like he has a huge upside. He's starting to show that he can play and be a contributor whenever John gets back. Obviously, they have a lot more confidence in Otto, but he's been banged up with the hip. They like Markieff Morris, even though he's close to 28 or so. They still feel like he's a part of their core. So they like the core that they have. They do. Even when John went down, they were not, like, aggressively trying to find help or to do anything else because they believe that what they have could still compete. And I think that if you make those investments, and you're not the Clippers, if you make these investments in the summer, you know, you got to kind of see it through. You got to see it through. If they go through this season and they get wiped out in the first round, then I think, yeah, I think you start exploring things. But you really don't know how the East is shaking up. You don't know how things are going to turn out. Cleveland may bottom out this year. They may not be the team that can't take them out. And I think if you're Washington, you're not looking at Boston and saying, man, we got no chance against them. You're not looking at Toronto and saying, man, we got no chance against them. I think if they're fully healthy and going into the postseason, they feel like they have a legitimate shot against everybody. So if you blow it up, you don't even get a chance to see it all the way through. And I think that's sort of the position they're in.
All right, before I get to the Clippers, I want to finish with them. Scal, I know you're always trying to buy more property. That's kind of your thing, right?
I do like property. Property. You know that, or you just made that up?
I just made that up.
Good.
I'm trying to transition this into what I'm about to read here. Support for the Yahoo Sports NBA podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time to make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/Mannix, equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. See, I'm helping you out. Man,
yeah, but just to be clear, if you have 10 homes, you probably aren't going to get qualified, right?
That's a probability, yes.
If it is your 10th home and you're selling a house, then you're looking good.
Yes.
But don't buy 10 homes.
No. We learned that in The Big Short. Like, that was kind of the motto.
That's all I thought about. If you're first or you're 10th, as long as it's not 10.
Yeah. All right. Let me finish with the Clippers, who are the other team that everyone's kind of circling out there as we head to the deadline. The Clippers just extended Lou Williams, taking him off the market. That's somebody a lot of teams had their eye on, were inquiring about. Teams that have called the Clippers have been told back by them that, look, if we don't get what we want for Lou Williams or DeAndre Jordan, we're keeping them. Now, some teams have said we don't believe them. We believe that Thursday, 2:30 Eastern, they're going to make some kind of deal. But they pulled back on Lou Williams. They extended him. Now you have DeAndre Jordan, and Jordan can opt out of his contract at the end of the year. He'd leave about $25 million on the table. But my question, Scal, is now that Blake Griffin is gone and Lou Williams is going to be around, and they're trying to rebuild with what they hope is a Pistons lottery pick, though the Pistons have been playing good basketball as of late, is DeAndre Jordan the type of guy, 29 years old, be 30 next season, is he the type of guy that you commit long-term money to?
I would give him 3 years. I'd give him 3 years, anywhere between $25 and $30 million.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Like, wow. I think no matter what, a guy rolling to the basket causes you to have to collapse. He could still throw the ball up and he can catch lobs. So he's like, a lot of people say he can't score on the block. I don't know if I care about that as much nowadays. I care about what he does to the defense when he dives to the basket. You have to come in. You got to bump him, which opens up three-point shooting. I would be fine with DeAndre Jordan being part of my rebuild. He doesn't seem like a demonstrative attitude. He's not like
He can be loud. He's a guy that can get on his teammates on the floor. He definitely can.
All I remember is Chris Paul yelling at him.
It went back and forth.
I always thought DeAndre Jordan was like...
No, he's not a bad guy in any way.
Goes out there,
he's a great guy, but he's really competitive, and he's a guy at the back end. He's always talking, and that's what you need. You need a guy who's always talking. And I think sometimes there are guys on the team that didn't always accept him talking the way he did. He was pretty demonstrative when it came to expressing, you know, when they miss assignments and stuff. But he's not a bad guy in any way. He's a great guy.
Yeah, I meant, if you have young guys on your team, is he going to derail them guys from getting better? Okay. So that's what I mean. I would keep him on my team if I could. I think he'd be fine. And anytime, unless he loses his athleticism, or I see him day in and day out and I know that he's lost a step, I'm like keeping him on my team. I need a guy like that to dive to the basket and block shots and rebound.
Yeah, I don't think they give him away either. I think they'll keep him if they don't get something real back in return. Let me ask you, Scal, about Doc Rivers and, you know, his future with the team. You know, Doc has made it clear that the situation in L.A. is not like what it was in Boston. Boston, he won a championship. He didn't want to rebuild after winning one. They have not won a championship yet in L.A., and that, he says, you know, motivates him to stick around and be there. You've played for Doc. You've covered Doc. I mean, do you buy that? Do you buy the thing?
I think Doc loves coaching. I think
in L.A., though. I think he loves coaching, but does he love coaching situation like L.A.?
You mean the rebuild?
Yes.
The Clippers?
Yeah.
I mean, I got no information of why he would want to not go through that. Mm. You know, like, if there was another job that opened up where he thought he could win a championship, I could see him doing something like that. Like, this is the better situation to go and win. But as of right now, I'm looking at him saying, like, if there's no other, I don't know what jobs are going to be available, or if he would want to get out of his contract and do the whole first round thing like they did in Boston. If you're looking at, I see they got to fire him if they don't want him there. I just think, I feel like he would want to coach, be in L.A. and go through this process.
Mm-hmm. Some good living in L.A. So I think that he enjoys that. I think he enjoys the life there.
I'd keep an eye on the Knicks job, though. I think if that opens up, I think there could be some interest there. I've heard some rumblings of that.
You think he'll do that because he was a Knick?
Well, I think it's an appealing job with Porzingis, the centerpiece, and then another high draft pick they're going to have this year.
Yeah.
I think, you know, go back to the East Coast. I think that's
sure.
Possible. I think
sure.
That's,
I think that this season, you know, with this sort of underdog team that he sort of has in the playoff hunt, I think people are starting to appreciate just the value he has as a coach.
Yeah.
I mean, because I think, you know, the fact that they weren't able to get over the hump, they weren't able to get past the second round, that was sort of being held against them. But I think people see now that, you know, this is a guy, the players that he's throwing out there right now and the fact that they're winning games with them says a lot about, you know, his acumen and just what he can get done as a coach. So I think that he's actually increasing his value this year by coaching an inferior team because he's showing that he can win whatever you give him.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think Doc would want to coach the Cavs. You know what I mean? Like, to coach, to watch the way that team is playing. But when I watch him coach the Clippers and I watch how hard they play, even they're not – I didn't think Blake Griffin has played hard at times this season. But I think that they're a hard-playing team. I don't think he has a problem coaching them.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, fellas, appreciate
you. Any more advertisements?
No, we're good. No more reads. I will make sure you get a mattress. Mike will, if you want to buy a new house somewhere, I'll see what I can do about lowering your interest rate.
I'm think in Philadelphia we can, now.
I have my
didn't
way.
Did you get burned down with the, like all the burning down of stuff?
No, nothing burned down as long as, you know, people aren't eating.
That awning that people jumps outside Mike's house.
Eating like, horse poop right in front of me.
Right there. Fellas, appreciate it. We'll reconvene after the deadline, I guess.
Shams, good seeing you, bud.
Yeah, Shams.
Shams,
all right, buddy.
Nice. Appreciate that. Hey, thanks for stopping by.
Fist bump.
All right.